Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening, everyone. Can anyone hear me there, and is anyone else on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Gary Foreman.
Hi, Gary. Hang on. Terry. Terry, is that you? Terry, is that you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Great.
Okay.
Okay.
We had a little blog talk radio difficulties tonight getting into
yes.
the host, and thank goodness Kate came to the rescue here.
Yeah, great. Red, are you there as well?
Yes.
Very good. Okay, Terry, take off. Go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you.
And I'll just be managing the chat room and so forth.
No worries.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm, Terry, I think there are a bunch of people on the line, 307, who are we speaking with? Hello?
I saw 307 call in earlier on the board, but I'm not sure who it is.
Well, am I 307? This is Gary Foreman.
You may be.
Okay. When you say 307, is that the caller ID number? Okay, I'm 219, so I'm not 307.
219, okay, great. All right, well, I assume our other manager is on the line, so she will manage the calls and stuff, okay? So, Terry, just go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry.
Well, I'd like to introduce our guest tonight, producer-director Gary Foreman, founder of... Native Sun Productions, and Red, glad to hear your voice there, and glad we all made it on finally. So tonight we want to talk about some interesting topics. We want to talk a little bit about telling our story and taking the American mind, the public, on a journey. And Gary, how about you tell us just a little bit about yourself and let the listeners get to know you a little bit.
Okay, well, like many people, I've come into my current standing through a lot of meanders, twists, and turns. It's been a kind of a exciting journey, actually, and it began when, fortunately, when I was being raised in the Midwest with my parents and my brothers, and I think I was influenced most by the stories they told, both whether we were at home or if we were on the road traveling around. And we were very fortunate. We did get out a number of times to different places, historic sites. And really, as even though my parents were somewhat limited in their education on history, they were good storytellers. And what they didn't know, they learned as much as possible, and they passed it on to us. And I think I carried that into my adult life. But the other thing I had that most of the kids that I went to school with didn't have is that my mother wasn't from the United States originally. She was an immigrant from Germany. And my dad met her just after World War II while he was there in occupation troops. And they fell in love over there. And then when he returned back, he decided he couldn't live without her and proposed to her. And then... in 1947, she came over to the United States and joined him. and she became a citizen several years later, I believe right after I was born in 1950. So that gives you a way of, about my age a little bit. But the point is, my mom came to this country with a very interesting perspective, and that of European history. And she had been through not only World War II, but you know the Depression from that from that side of the world. And because she was from Germany, she also was part of the catastrophe that that country experienced, but also from within. And I know that some of that experience and some of that wisdom was shared with us on many occasions as we watched some of our own disasters unfold here in this country. And it, that perspective was was well cherished and well respected by all our entire family. But especially today, I often wonder what she would say about these United States, a country she had come to love so profoundly and understand so well. And if she was alive today, I wonder what she would say. And So that's a little bit of my start. And then I had been mostly in media pretty much since 1972. While still a junior at the University of Wisconsin, I started working more than part-time at an ABC affiliate as a photographer and writer. And eventually it just I realized I really didn't have a stomach for commercial television as we know it in the news. Although I was moving up, I thought, rather rapidly for my age, had quite a bit of a collective experience on camera, behind the scenes. But I knew in my heart that there was something wrong with this whole media system, and that what I really wanted to do was be a more honest storyteller than someone who's creating things for the 6 and 10 o'clock news. So that led me on a whole different soul-searching effort, and I finally made a list of all the things that I eventually said what I want to do, and now I'm actually living off of that list that I created. So it's and the list continues to grow as I do more soul searching about who I am and what I really want to do with my life. So it's I'm still a kid in many respects because I get the chance to pretend in my mind that I am a kid, and I'm always going to, I think, pretty much stay that way. And that allows me to imagine what I'm capable of doing and creating and enjoying in my life. And I'm surrounded by phenomenal people, brilliant people, loving people. But I think that's something that we design for ourselves. I mean, we create that cast and crew, if you will, of your life. And those are the people when you really focus on it, that's what shows up. And so I've got a great supporting cast around me. We've got a wonderful wife my son, who's actually been working in my business since he was a young child. And we've had some great experiences. So I basically have been located in two different areas of the country with my work. The Midwest, and also in Texas, San Antonio especially, and that's where we produce most of our programs.
Well, tell me a little bit more about your son, because, you know, we were talking the other day, and my son's very similar to yours. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. a strong patriot, he's a conservative, and he gets things that even I don't mm-hmm. get, so I'd like to hear just a little bit about that.
All right, Terry, my son, his name is Jeffrey David Foreman, and he's 24. And Jeff was born into a very interesting life, because not only were we filmmakers, but I was also been involved in living history, and so he grew up with the American history being brought to life in front of him, and with the encampments and the Revolutionary War battles and so forth. But he also, we also eventually worked him into learning how to work with people on the different sets of different productions that we were assigned to, a lot of History Channel things. And so he picked up the stories and understood them from working behind the scenes. And I also got him to work on a couple of projects. He was an extra in The Last of the Mohicans in 1991. It came out in 1992, just for a couple brief scenes. But it was a kind of interesting experience. He met some very interesting people there. But he also, later, as I got to be a teenager, he was the first, I believe he's the first American to ever portray young Andrew Jackson on television. And I was real proud of him in that, and but he's, you know, he enjoys working behind the scenes, and he and it was interesting, Terry. You know, I wasn't sure exactly what his influence was going to be, because you know you just never know with kids. As Khalil Gibran once said in his book The Prophet, he says, "Your children come through you, not from you." And so I wasn't sure how he was going to come through. And but what I think got excited about over the last 5-6 years or so, maybe a little bit longer than that, but he started to understand that what his father and me, what I've been going through to maintain keep a company going, and to and make a living in this day. And I think he appreciated not only the background of the stories that he was a part of as far as his youth, but also I think that he was starting to understand the whole idea of self-reliance and understand what government really is. And he decided at a really early age to, with a couple of other friends, to become entrepreneurs and try their hand at their own business attempts. And I think when he saw how much government intrudes on everyone's life, I think that nailed it for him, that he understood what the founding fathers were trying to attempt. But he's still learning as a student in a way of history. But I think what's happening to him, Terry, is it's the whole idea of freedom and liberty, and the whole concepts of becoming your own person without a huge government chaperone is very appealing to him. And he clearly sees, what is happening across the country. And I'm very excited, because he and maybe like your son, he is just eating up the news, and he's eating up all the information he can get about what's happening in the business circle, what's happening in politics. And he knows these people inside and out. And I'm really proud of him, and it's really exciting, because my wife Carol and I, have some very, very exciting discussions with him, and it's enjoyable as a father, because what's exciting here is that, he's not doing it because I'm doing it, and Carolyn's doing it. He's doing it because he can really see and sort out in his own mind what's really happening.
Well, I think one of the things that we're wanting to talk about tonight, mm-hmm. is the concept of the blessing, and that is where you speak positively to someone, you touch them, you let them know that you care, you give them a promising future, and I believe that's what our patriots in this country have been lacking, and I think that you and I maybe should pat each other on the back that we have at least let our sons hear our story and to know what the truth is, and to give them even a spiritual foundation. But they can see the truth because they know that we forgive them, I believe. And maybe that's a perfect place for us to go into this conversation and to launch out into what we intended to talk about tonight.
Well, it's often been said forgiveness is a mighty tough assignment for most humans, and and I really think that is the quest. And I'm without exposing all of my son's attributes and vices about this, both of us have had through our lives have so far had short tempers, and mine diffuses a little faster than his. Part of it because I'm older now, but the other side of it is I really think when we sort out what Christianity is and what a noble and virtuous society is, it's about embracing forgiveness, because that's the only way in which we're going to heal not only our nation but ourselves. And every time I look at the things that upset me, I find the most relief when I finally come around to forgiving either myself. And that's number one. I try to do that. I've been really tough on myself throughout most of my life. And if I forgive myself and also learn how to actually say a prayer and forgive others, even some of those people who, I have felt who may have tried to destroy me in some way or another. And, I think that's going to be the salvation of our society and of our country, is the whole idea of embracing forgiveness.
Well, it certainly helps clear the mind, that's for sure. I believe that a lot of people have a lot of trouble perceiving truth around them because they are not able to forgive either themselves or the people around them. And it just seems to distort everything that we see and think.
Well, some of the things that I've been following that ties into forgiveness is, and we may have talked about this in a previous conversation, but one of the things that I am very keenly aware of now is our individual energies and vibrational forces that reflect who we are on the inside. And I'm one of my favorite authors on the subject is Dr. David Hawkins from Arizona, and he's written a series of books having to do with the whole subject of truth and also verifying truth through kinesiology, which is muscle testing. But one of the things that, and you were talking about how it clears the mind, forgiveness absolutely clears out the entire spectrum of the body and mind. Our whole quantum physics with this whole theory of how cells are actually vibrating out, and to get scientific about it right on the outset here, but I wanted to share this because quantum physics or quantum theory is really a point where scientists and believers, spiritual people, are coming together hand in glove because they're seeing there is a strong relationship in the healing process when we forgive and when we raise our vibrational energies at a certain point through love and respect and forgiveness. It really heals us. I mean, miracles happen when we shift out of being negative and scornful and hateful, and we shift that energy notch up so that all of a sudden we actually affect our complete molecular structures in our body, and that energy changes everything. It's and I've been in broadcast media and television for many years, and Terry, this is the analogy I use is this: is that each of us is a vibrational energy broadcast signal, and what we send out is what we also get back. But let me share this because I think it reflects where you're going with this. But I'll do this on the offset because I'd like to hear other people talk about this. But if let's say you're operating off of channel 5, all you're going to get is channel 5. You're not going to get channel 8. But if you change your vibrational pitch or your vibrational energies up higher, you're going to attract back what you send out. So we are, all of us are basically broadcast transmitters. And what we send out to the universe is what we end up getting back. Now, some people call it by different names, but and some people call it law of attraction. But it is really that quantum physics that both the spiritual person and the scientist are embracing, because it is part of that law in the universe, that's exactly what we are. And so when we engage in a strong energy lift through love and respect, then in fact that's what happens across our entire universe.
Well, what kind of messages were you hearing being sent out at the Continental Congress, Gary?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll tell you what. I had been watching the Continental Congress in session throughout as often as I could tear away from from my office assignments here, but I would watch as much as possible. But when I actually showed up at the Congress in St. Charles, and got a pass to be an observer, and I walked into that auditorium, there was some phenomenal energy going on. Now, for those people who may not who are tuning in may not know much about the Continental Congress, and I'm sure you've talked about it in your programs, Terry, but this Continental Congress that was meeting for 11 days, I believe it was, November 11th through the 22nd, something like that, or 21st of November. What was interesting to me was that I was experiencing it as a portal. I'm like a historical portal, as though I could look back to the first Continental Congress and basically feel the same type of energies that probably was going on back then through these people, through all of you. And the energy was very intense, but it was a very good energy. Now don't get me wrong, I, like a lot of people, we noticed that there was some angst, there was some challenges out there, there was some arguments, but can't be anything unlike what we had in 1774. And so to me, despite the rifts that may have been going on in this very difficult session to wordsmith something so sensitive and so courageous of a document, that there had to be a lot of certain types of fluctuating emotions going through it. And what we felt was that intensity of purpose. And that intensity of purpose was extremely intense. But when I say intense, I'm not saying from a from someone who is contesting, but more from someone who probably would be searching for answers rather than fighting for answers. Now, I mean, that's what it was. That's the way it appeared from where we were in the auditorium. But I noticed that it was an energy that had a great amount of commitment, passion, and certainly a lot of real American love. I mean, that was, to me and Carolyn, that was quite obvious. And on the last day, we actually brought Jeff in to watch this, and he was very impressed as well. So that's how we saw it. And I remember that I was shaking the hands of a lot of the delegates towards the end of the closing ceremonies when they were coming back in. I had tears in my eyes because this is when everyone was coming back, I think, for the pictures to be taken. And I was emotionally taken by this. And I'm just an observer. I didn't go through all the challenges of I don't know, what they figured all of you got as much sleep, 3 hours a night, or on average 3.5 hours for 11 straight days?
Three and a half was probably a pretty good number.
Yeah, I thought it was just remarkable, actually.
Gary, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back probably in a minute and a half and talk a little bit more about your experience at Continental Congress.
Glad to talk about it.
I don't know what I can do. The government's making up all new rules. This is change I don't believe in. But there are those that plot and scheme. They think they have the right to change everything. This country's founded on.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. Red, you've been quiet for 30 minutes. Now, that might be a record. I'm not sure. Red, are you still with us? Is anybody still with us?
Oh, I'm with you.
Okay. I don't know what happened. Gary, would you like to continue your comment on the Continental Congress?
Yes, I would. What also struck me was that, first of all, I wasn't surprised, but I was very frustrated, like most of you seem to get on. When the media doesn't show up for things that really matter. Now, I'm used to that, and I'm familiar with it because I've been in media most of my life, and I know what these rascals are up to. But it was disappointing. However, I think media is setting themselves up for a big turnaround in many ways. And that struck me, Terry, because the fact that they weren't there. So what I did on one of the evenings, here's what happened. In between my visits, I called all the networks that I could and just asked them, are they aware of what's going on in St. Charles, Illinois? And I remember talking to CNN, and I spoke with CBS, and I called about six different networks. And I think everybody was aware. In fact, they had been getting phone calls throughout the course of the week that indeed there was something peculiar and original going on here. And in fact, I think it was the receptionist at CNN. She said to me, "Oh yeah," she says, "we're getting a lot of calls about this." And I said, "Well, how come someone's not there?" And she says, "Well, you'll have to talk to so-and-so and so-and-so." And I said, "No, I'm just wanting to know if you heard about this." And they said, "Yes, our people are very much aware of what's going on." And then I called USA Today, and the same thing happened there, the same exchange with the people at USA Today. So there was enough of a rumble there, but the disturbing thing that's been going on in our country, and of course we saw it with the 9/12 march and gathering in Washington, is that here you can be, I don't know how many people were there, Terry, some estimate over a million, but I mean, how it shut down the entire city, so how can you miss? And yet the Washington Post didn't even get it a mention. No photographs, nothing. So
well, I was there for Stand in the Gap back in the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And we had about a million people on the mall, and I've seen the aerial photos of the 912, and it looked more like there was closer to 2 million to me than 1 million. And I think the Washington police cameras, which they have a pretty good means of estimate,
mm-hmm.
they estimated 1.7 million.
Yeah, I think Terry, that those estimates were also supported by the National Park Service, which also does the same thing. And so absolutely right. But, you know, one of the things that I experienced with and back to media and also covering the Continental Congress, and I want to mention this because my my first Tea Party was in Chicago in February earlier this year. And my brother actually drove down to from Wisconsin to meet me in Chicago and attend this because we had no idea that what the numbers were going to be for showing up there on the streets in Mayor Daley's town here. And so we heard that there was going to be maybe 150 people. So I thought, well, that's fine, you know, but I want to experience this. I want to be there. So I went down there with my Gadsden Don't Tread on Me flag. You know, that's the yellow Revolutionary War flag that a lot of people are flying. And I went down there and met up with my brother. And at that time, there was somewhere about, I would say 150 to 175 people. Well, we met in Daley Plaza, and all of a sudden, the crowd started growing. And then, I heard that there was a planned march to the Tribune Towers. And it was cold there. I mean, it was, you know, Chicago's always cold in the wintertime. But, I mean, it was, you know, it was really raw. And we had snow flurries. And I noticed that my voice wasn't going to last much longer than that cold. But I was really impressed by several things. And I had, you know, as a student at the University of Wisconsin, I had seen many, many protests and marches and so forth. But what was remarkable about this group, Terry, was that these people had information. They had a clear idea why they were there. A lot of these people were, you know, business people, educators, all of them had that look of purpose in their eyes. They weren't just hanging around because it's cool to shout out, you know, down the street. I mean, these people had a sense of place when they were standing there in Daley Plaza. When we marched from Daley Plaza to the Tribune Tower, which was Pioneer Square there, the ranks swelled up to about 500, which I was pretty impressed with for that last-minute organization, and especially in Chicago, which is Obama land. And when we got to the Pioneer Square and crossed over the, you know, on the Chicago River and reformed up there when everyone got together, there were several speeches and there were several impromptu shouts and chants and so forth. But the media that was there, there was other talk radio going through the crowds and doing some quick interviews. And it was real exciting. And a very positive experience to listen in as these other people gave their little sound bites of why they were there and what their message was. And as they spoke, you could see that they were empowering one another, and they were all nodding and understanding why they were there and why it was important to be there. And it was an investment of their time and their energy to make a point. Well, what was real amazing was that I expected, because we were right underneath the shadow of Chicago Tribune Tower, is that the next day there was no mention of these 500 people underneath the shadows of the Tribune. And I mean, you couldn't miss us. But I got an early hint of the throughout the beginning of the year that that's what was going to happen. But anyway, as we got into the issues with the the media and the Continental Congress, I began to think a little bit about this, since I know a lot of people on all levels of media and in the networks, and some of my friends actually, you know, work for the what they call the mainstream, and I can, without mentioning names, I can tell you some side stories about how they feel about all this. But although I was disappointed that the media wasn't there and should have been there, I really think that maybe that this is going to work out actually for the better, because I think the media is going to be cleansed in the next couple of years. And cleansed means I think there's going to be a rework and a transformational phase where we finally settle down and we clean house. We clean house for content. We clean house for purpose. We clean house for vision. We clean house for responsibility. We clean house because it's time. And this is way overdue, and not just in radio and television, but every aspect of media. We have really trashed it. And media is, it's forgot its purpose and its responsibility. And so I think that the last laugh, if you want to call it that, will come from the side of the Continental Congress. Because when it's really time to share what you folks have been doing and what you have done, there's going to be some very embarrassed people who have the chance to be there. And I think this will make a huge statement that will actually work out in the long run.
Well, you've got a vision for reaching out to people and taking them on a journey. And to the extent that you're willing to talk about that tonight, I know we've got some delegates from Continental Congress that are in our chat room. We've got a number of patriots that I'm familiar with, as well as guests listening to our show tonight. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like for you to just kind of share that vision of how we can go about taking the American people on a journey to educate them, to give them wisdom, and to help them see the truth in what's going on in our country.
Well, I'm gonna take all of you back a little bit of time. I'm gonna take you back about 6 years ago, and that's when this particular journey began. And what happened was, this story I'm sharing with you should not be too unfamiliar to you. I mean, it should be something that will resonate with most of you out there, because I'm sure, like myself, you saw that, you know, 6 years ago that we just weren't communicating what really mattered. And now, again, being in media and also being a storyteller on American history, I've had some very interesting opportunities to get into, halls of some of our greatest historic sites and passageways through time. But one of the things that we noticed 6 years ago was that we continually refused to tell the story of our constitutional focus or our constitutional responsibilities. And we were not talking about how to shrink the government. We were not talking about how to be fiscally responsible. We were not talking about the things that really matter. In fact, we weren't really communicating at all, whether it's about conservative values or anything. And it was though that people were supposed to get this information through osmosis. Now, in my years of working in media, I've had the opportunity to meet other politicians and delegates and so forth. And one of the individuals that I had done, I conducted at least two interviews with and did a photo session with him, was Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert. Now, without getting into a long dissertation about Dennis Hastert, I felt, because I had probably had more access to him than anyone else, I gave it a real try to share an idea about what I felt needed to happen to change the way that we communicate conservative values in this country because they weren't being shared. They weren't being discussed. They were not being communicated. And so we came up with a plan to create a video series, and we wanted to, you know, we felt that something had to happen or else the next couple of elections, that was 06 and 08, would not fare well at all. And I don't, you know, everyone knows what happened. So in this last election, after the last election, it didn't take a lot of effort to get some real key conservatives and constitutionally minded people and scholars together to discuss what's our next step. So basically out of this whole process came what we have created is called a proposal to produce a series called An Expression of the American Mind, and that's taken from Thomas Jefferson's introduction to the Declaration of Independence. And what it is a series of six short video presentations packaged together that focus on some really basic issues, and that includes the following: American principles as envisioned by our founding fathers, capitalism versus socialism, education, healthcare, national defense, and of course the monetary system. We selected those six, and those six topics. I call them pillars. They were selected out of my experience of traveling around the country and interviewing a lot of people about what's really important. But these are really part of some of the foundation blocks of our society, and this is nothing new to our listeners out there. I assure you that you all know that most Americans have no clue of where they stand. They don't understand their geography. They don't understand their history, and they certainly don't understand how our whole monetary system works. Now, so what we felt was needed was something that could reach the average American, but in a very insightful and inspirational way to get them on a journey to follow up and do more reading and more research and become a little bit more enlightened. But we have to do it in a way that gets them excited about their freedoms. And one of the things that, you know, we're able to do in our work is we get to a lot of different groups of people, especially both educators and students. And one of the things we ask these people is, by constitutional law, who's the most powerful person in the country, according to constitutional law? And it's amazing how many people are just totally dumbfounded by that question. Now, in producing stories that we've done, like for the History Channel and PBS, A&E, and Discovery, and so forth, you know, it's not just the people that have a problem with it. I mean, as far as the everyday American, it's also our corporate leaders. It's also, and again, our educators, and it's also the networks. You know, and I remember when 9/11 came around, and all the networks were trying to piece together what the impact was on this country in comparison to what's happened to us before. And they were talking about the last time this country was invaded by a foreign power of any kind was really the War of 1812. But then after that, they just couldn't say anything more. They couldn't elaborate much on the War of 1812, what it was. So, of course, later on, we actually produced a two-hour special on the War of 1812. But my point here is that when it comes to understanding the most important elements of this country, most people are totally clueless. So what do? Well, you have to become a storyteller that gets them excited about a story that explains to them that's all about them. But it's not only all about them, it's about perhaps the last gasp of fresh air they're going to get unless they do something to protect something that belongs to them. And for many people who are getting involved today, this is the first time they're really understanding civics. This is the first time they're understanding their Constitution. And it's the first time that they're really getting a sense of what it may be like to be an American. And, you know, you're starting to see the beginning of the transformation when people are buying tremendous volumes of books and videos and other materials to enrich themselves. We're seeing a huge shift. Now, we started seeing some of that in earlier periods in dribs and drabs, depending on a movie or depending on a book that would come out or depending on a motion picture that would come out. But now we're seeing a more consistent indulgence in quality material than we have in a long, long time. And I think it's because people, you know, by human nature, people just naturally finally start doing something when they feel threatened. And like the old adage says, is that nothing happens when you're comfortable. Well, I think the discomfort level is becoming acute in many ways. And so I really think that that's why the American Mind proposal, which is a multimedia idea that would bring both the video and the internet together, will be a force to help get people on that journey, Terry, so that they are exposed to people and patriots like yourself and Red and the delegates out there who have tremendous knowledge and experience with this material. So we're hoping to get it launched. The dream idea is to get it launched around tax day, this coming tax day on April. So we've got a lot of work to do. We still are trying to nail down the funding, but we got our complete production teams ready to go as soon as we get the support. But we have a plan, and we're very excited about it. The other thing about the expression of the American Mind, it's going to be a melding of the Revolutionary War period with today's modern issues. And the reason is because we strongly know that time is but an illusion, and that many of the things that people want or wanted back then is what they want today. And deep down, and we know technology changes, and that's what changes, you know, our eras and our periods of time is technology. But basically, when you listen to the people, you hear their voices from the past, it's not unlike the voices that you have inside of you today. So what we want to do is reach that common denominator and make people realize that the Americans of the past are very much their brethren. And we are connected, but we need to get on with it.
How do we end this series that you're wanting to produce?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get people to understand? There's a lot of people that are on the fence,
mm-hmm.
and the reason they're on the fence is because they don't want to go back to, in their minds, outhouses. they want to enjoy what they get today from the government, from fractional reserve banking. You know, they've become addicted to living above their means.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that to a certain extent they fear, like, if we go back to, you know, a bailment system, honest money, gold and silver backed, whatever kind of system,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to have to bring it back in their own life and be more disciplined. And I believe people are very much afraid of that, but I think the reason they are is because they don't understand what they're giving up. So how do we get that message across to them about what they're giving up?
Well, you know, that is a really good question, because everybody comes from a different experience about what that might mean for them. But let me say about sacrifice is that, I think we become better human beings, not by taking it easy or taking the easy road or the easy way out, but we become better through the challenges of life. And that's what makes us real. Another way to put it is, it doesn't take any character at all to go through life when things are handed to you and when everything's on easy street. We all enjoy that, I think, but for the most part, I think we were all meant, our bodies, our minds, and our spirit was meant for working at something. And I think we become disenchanted with ourselves when we really find out that we're not really working towards anything of any worth or value anymore. In fact, we are at such a point in our lives that we live our dreams and our fantasies out with other people's lives. And that's why reality TV, if you want to call it reality television, and some of the most ridiculous programming you see on television today is nothing but Trivial Pursuit. In other words, most of America no longer has a life. And why doesn't it have a life? Because it is sitting there vegetating. It's not getting a workout. Our bodies aren't getting a workout. Our minds aren't getting a workout. We're not involved in critical thinking. We've had everything handed to us, and we are not a happy people. Terry, we are not a happy people. And you can see it when, just by the, you know, in fact, that unhappiness is being played out every day on the streets of this country. Just look at the headlines. What are we absorbed in? What are we fascinated about? And those headlines or those news banners, those tell us everything about what our focus is on. And we're focusing on the inane material and the trivial pursuit because we no longer know what it's like to have a real life. And I think that the laws of nature provide for these calamities to happen when they're supposed to happen. And there is no accident here. And so if we have to suffer, so-called suffer, when, what does that really mean? Well, There will be some suffering. There has been some suffering. But when we get a grip on it and when we really look at what is most important in our lives instead of all this stuff that we accumulate, then we become real Americans again. We become real people who really focus on the things that made this country great. And it wasn't all the accumulation of material wealth. That's not what made us great. You know, that old statement about the American exceptionalism had nothing to do with the gold rush. It had to do with pursuing dreams that people thought were just absolutely impossible just a few decades before that. You know, for many years, even after the American Revolution, there was a haunting thought, and actually a pervasive thought going throughout the entire continent, that this American experiment was not going to last. In fact, England, France, and Spain all thought that this so-called United States was a joke, because how could anything survive without a monarchy, without a king? How could it survive? There was no way.
Gary, believe it or not, we've been on here for an hour already. And we are up against our one-hour break. This will be about a four-minute break because it's a long song we're going to listen to. So if you want to grab a drink of water or whatever, I'm hoping that we're going to hear from Red Beckman here. I'm not sure what happened to Red. Red, are you there? If you are, speak up because we're not hearing you, buddy. You might need to call back in or whatever. But at any rate, we're going to go for break, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes and continue our discussion.
Okay.
Stay with us.
One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see," and I saw, and behold, a white horse.
The There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound, when the man comes around.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. I'm hoping our buddy Red Beckman's back on with us. Red, are you there? Well, Gary, how about you? Are you with us?
I am.
Well, good. I'm not sure what happened to Red. I hope everything's okay with him there. I tried to give him a call during the break and did not get an answer, so. I'm not sure what's going on with that. His phone line is showing on the board, but at any rate, Gary, you've got a unique perspective because of your experience and where you're coming from. And everybody's been talking about this Articles of Freedom, which you've got a taste of at the Continental Congress, but you probably haven't seen the actual documents. I've seen the draft of it, but it has a lot in there, especially about civic action. And there's been some discussion that that document is going to kind of grow a life of its own, and that people are going to jump into this movement because of what's in that Articles of Freedom. And, you know, I see people that are so, even in our churches, even when I go to church, I see that people are looking to be recharged from external sources. They're looking for stimuli. And I really believe that the concept that you've got is going to be necessary in order to again, take people on this journey, to get them back to where they have an understanding of truth. They have a recognition of what they've given up. They have an idea, a better idea of what the Founding Fathers really intended for this republic. And, you know, I just believe that what you're doing is necessary and important. And I'm wondering just how, you know, if there's something you want to say or talk about to maybe some of the delegates that are listening, how can we participate? How can we get involved and take advantage of what you're doing? How are you planning on getting it out there and marketing? Is this something we're going to be able to take and use in our local areas to distribute, or is it going to be mass media? You know, kind of give them some perspective of that.
I'd be glad to. Actually, all of the above, Terry, and let me explain why that's so. One of the things that, you know, we hang our hats on so much in this country is what we call mainstream media. And I like to kind of help shift people's minds about what, you know, all of that. Mainstream media is also, in our words, in our vernacular, is old stream media. And what I mean by that is that it is actually becoming more and more irrelevant and not being useful, because when you are full of fluff and inane material, people feel empty with it. And I remember, Terry, recently, well, in recent years, I have a couple of friends who, not as many now as I had before, but now still work at NBC in New York and Rockefeller Center. And a couple of them work on the Today Show. And I remember having lunch with them. And this is a few years back, but it's not that long ago. And at that point, I was asking them, I said, why are you still working here? I mean, you're a better journalist than this. I mean, why are you people allowing your program just to go to hell? And it's very formulaic. I mean, in the beginning you got some news, and then you start falling apart. You start getting trivial, and you start getting inane with everybody. Why is that? And he said, well, you know, and I actually knew what the answer was going to be, but he actually said it pretty clearly. He says, well, that's what we're told to do. And he says, no matter how much we dislike it, the problem is that in this, or at least it was at this time, and when I asked him the question, there really weren't that many outlets for people who've had a tremendous amount of a tremendous body of work in network television and network news to go anyplace else if, in fact, the networks weren't interested in doing the news like it should be done. So I think what's happening here is that there's a shift and a reinvention and remodeling of how we communicate through the Internet and through, you know, these different social gathering places. And I think that the great free market and the great American mind that's out there, that creative, fun-loving American, creates all sorts of new opportunities that weren't even there yesterday. And so what we're doing is we're going to move this downstream. We're not going to fight upstream. We're not going to fight what's not being allowed. In other words, we are not going to go and try to shove this into a network that just doesn't understand this content. But, you know, there are several networks that we feel very strong about that will embrace this, But we really feel that the flexibility and versatility of the American Mind Project will allow people, whether you're a delegate or a business person that making a public presentation, or if you're running for an office, or if you're just with people and you want to talk about what really matters today, you'll be able to have either a DVD, you can get it on YouTube, you'll be able to get it in a variety of ways. So we have to let go and say, realize that once you get it out there, it then creates a whole life of its own. You know, you're all familiar, aren't you, Terry, with the fellow that has done the Thomas Paine presentations?
Bob
Basso. And Bob's from the Los Angeles area. And I've had a chance to talk to him personally. I went to see him perform as Thomas Paine on Tax Day in Indianapolis. But that's a perfect example. You know, he's, I think, done four or five videos of his Thomas Paine presentation. And each one is in the multiple millions. In fact, taken together, all his videos have, I think, over 12 million hits. Now, you know, that is moving along at a nice clip. But I think American Mind will do exceptionally well because it's not about what I'm doing. It's really about what I'm capturing from all of you and all of your efforts out there. In fact, you asked, well, what can the delegates do and so forth? Well, as we get closer to what I feel will be an actual schedule, I have a preliminary schedule already established, but once we get supported and moving, I'm planning on having a number of delegates interviewed on this program. But, you know, what we really are blessed with our resources, we have some phenomenal cast and crew people who can actually recreate the 18th century and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution being created and the Revolution. But we also want to meld it with some of the great illustrations of what's happening in our country today with not only the Tea Party, but a lot of other footage that really illustrates the point that we're trying to make on each of these topics. So we're very excited. Plus, like I said, we got CGI animation capabilities that are just not only award-winning, but very exciting in helping tell the story. You know, Red Beckman has that wonderful presentation he does about the monster. And Terry, you and I were talking to Red about this before. We could see how his presentation can have a new version of what he's doing. And it'll be very exciting to see it, to watch this caged animal come to life, and show people, you know, how maybe Terry's Red's vision maybe was incubated, you know, some 30 years ago with this thing. So it's endless. It's absolutely endless. You know, there is no limit to what good storytelling can do. And where it can go, and where people will take it, because today there is no end to any of it. I mean, it's absolutely limitless. So, I don't know. You asked a good question. That's the answer, and the answer keeps growing. I mean, we already have great distribution channels and possibilities. We have a very good relationship with the Heritage Foundation. They have 550,000. Members, and the Heritage Foundation says if you get this launched, we love to distribute your material to everybody we can. So, you know, that's just one of many, many groups we feel will want to jump on this. But the whole purpose of it is to fire people up about not only what their legacy is about, but what their responsibility is about. So, again, very good question, but the best that I can answer is that it's limitless where we can go.
Well, I'm very excited about it. I think that it's got a tremendous amount of potential, and I know we've got to do some things, like we got to get back into our churches and educate people how to be jurors and and help them to recognize that they don't have to be silenced, that they can be a part of what's going on. And we've just been lied to in so many ways, and our pulpits have really been silenced by the bribery of the tax deduction. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to be a part of the check and balance system, and we've got to get people to watch and to pay attention, and I believe what you're going to do is going to accomplish that. Can you give us a little idea what got you started thinking about this originally, how this vision of yours came into being?
Well, yeah, there was actually it was pretty easy from our perspective, because you know we're already in this business, but the type of business we're in, you know, is producing these high end documentaries for different networks, and so we cross paths with a lot of people, in different walks of life, including top scholars but everyday people. And it was becoming obvious to us over, a period of time that as you start talking to people, there was it was very, almost like you could divide it down with a wall in the middle of our country, is that there were a lot of people who knew quite a bit about our country. And then there was the opposite, where they knew nothing, with very few of people in the middle. And
okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Because, okay, you're back on.
I'm back on. Yes.
All right.
Yes, I did. And she was very nice about it too, by the way.
Well, that's good. Well, you're in the middle of a thought. I hope you can remember where you were.
Yeah, I can. Well, anyways, it's about our experience in producing these documentaries. And so, you know, we not only talk to the scholars and the experts and, of course, the people in our business, but we also have a chance to talk to the everyday person on the street about these issues. And there's a big disconnect here. And so what we saw here is that Americans really, really didn't get who they were. You know, as the average person, you can take them out on the street, and they don't understand that they're standing on sacred ground. All the stories, all the personalities, all the events that have taken place on this continent is absolutely mind-blowing. And most people, when you go to certain places, or any place for that matter, they have no idea about the legacy that they've been given. So we also saw, Terry, that it's just that we had the blind leading the blind. We had teachers and so-called educators that had no clue what we were talking about. So, you know, my first History Channel show was the first show that became the History Channel, and that was the American Revolution. And I was a field producer and historical consultant to the series. And I remember that when I went to Los Angeles, where the show was originating from at the time it was being created, and talking to the producers and talking about, well, what do we want to accomplish here? And the answer was, well, you know, of course they wanted high ratings. They want to start the History Channel off. But I think initially the History Channel wanted to get people excited about who they were. And that's what the whole issue was.
Red, are you back on with us? I guess not. I thought they said he was back on the board, but I guess not.
Hmm.
Well, Gary, I'm sure wish Red was here, because I know he's got a tremendous amount to say about what you're talking about, as we discussed earlier on the phone today.
Mm-hmm.
There's an incredible amount to plan and to do and to bring this together. And is there anything that we can do regarding the funding of this project of yours?
Well, you know, what I suggest, Terry, is if you don't mind, if and people have, you know, you probably have posted your email address, is that anyone interested in being a part of this in any way, or seeing it as a funding opportunity, you know, please, you know, have them contact you, and then you can put us all together. I think this is going to go really quickly. I do. I feel very good about it, and I'll tell you why. Is that for us to produce this, even within three and a half months to pull off what we've got to pull off. We're seasoned at doing this kind of thing. Unfortunately, in our business, everything's usually rush anyway. But you know, we love this kind of topic. We're experts at it. But the real experts that we want to bring in are, you know, the scholars and some of the delegates and the passionate people who have stories to tell. And I'll tell you, someone else that I'm really looking forward to pulling in. And there's a whole myriad of American citizens who are originally from communist bloc countries, who experience what it's like not to have real freedom, and their stories about what they went through to finally become an American, I mean legally, to become an American and to live this dream, and now watch it starting to fall apart. I mean, and I know you have, but many others, if you've ever talked to these people, they are livid with us. They said, why are you doing this? Why are you I came over here because you were unique. I'm coming over here because it was America. I'm coming over here because I had a chance to live in what we thought was freedom. And now, ironically, they're going back to what they escaped from. And, you know, and this is what I find so amazing, is that 20 years ago, that Berlin Wall came down. And I remember, because my mom was still alive, and I remember when that wall came down, she was crying like crazy, and I had her on the phone. And she was absolutely amazed, because we still had friends and even distant relatives who were in East Germany. And she said, I never, ever would have dreamed that I would see this before I died. And now, today, ironically, we're going back to exactly those days in which we were afraid of. And it's just the most unbelievable irony that you can ever imagine. So I'm looking for some
worse
of those stories. Yeah.
Only worse, because instead of watching it and defending it, we're living it.
Well, yeah, and that's the point.
I believe we've got Red Beckman back on with us.
Yeah, I'm on. Can you hear me?
We can, Red.
We hear you loud and clear.
Well, I was almost yelling at you at the turn of the hour when you were talking and trying to get a hold of me, and I could hear you talking as clear as could be, but I couldn't. You didn't hear me. I would like to say just a little bit. One thing I was reminded of when Gary was telling how his mother had come from Germany, I was on ABC, the flagship station on the West Coast, with Ray Bream, and I think Gary would probably remember him. That was late night talk radio.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In nationwide syndicated, and it was early 80s. And we were having a major discussion, and I made the comment, I said, well, you have to remember that Germany was the first nation to be conquered by the Nazis. And I don't know whether you've ever heard anybody say that, Gary, but, it shocked Ray Bream, and he was off the air for a bit. I had to carry the program. while he assimilated that, and finally came back to his mic, and he said, you know, he said, I've never thought of it, but that's exactly what happened. And, of course, we're living through a similar situation in this country.
Yes,
where,
we are.
Our country is being conquered by a political philosophy that is totally foreign to the idea of freedom and liberty. And so I wanted to inject that. And then I wanted to say that, you know, we were created in the likeness of our Creator. We were to be creative. We were to be productive. And, you know, I've said it so many times, I'm an optimist. I believe that you are going to be an optimist if you function in the likeness of your Creator. And this is a theology that is not being taught in our churches, in our theological seminaries and such. They're not teaching the fact that if we're created in the likeness of our God, our Creator, then we should be naturally creative and productive. And this is one of the things that should help us discern the fact that our system has become very evil. We use the word corruption, and really we should be using a couple of biblical terms like sin and evil and wicked would probably be better than the word corruption the way we use it. And so anyway, I really enjoyed listening to Gary here because he's an unusual guest, and I think that, you know, there is so much that can happen when we start thinking in terms of being creative and productive. And that's what Gary is talking about here. Being creative, being productive in the way of, you know, to be productive, you have to have mental capacity to make things happen. And so this is what we've been hearing tonight, is that it is possible to make things happen today, right today. And we still have time to do that. And of course, talking about the mainstream media earlier, I think the same thing is going to happen to the television media as is happening to the major newspapers in this country. They're going to start losing a lot of money. I'm sure they're losing a lot of money right now. And so much of our problem has been because people with a political agenda have managed to get control of so much of the major media. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have been fed this steady diet of political propaganda. And if these people lose a lot of money, and we might be fortunate enough to have some new blood get in there in positions of power as far as those network television networks are, people that are news people rather than propaganda merchants. And so that's just one of the things that makes me an optimist. I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to see that. In fact, I think we're seeing some indication of it already. And so we're an hour and a half. I better let Gary talk because we've got a good guest tonight, Terry, and you're asking the right questions, and I'm enjoying listening to the answers.
Well, Red,
take another break in about 30 seconds just to give you a heads up.
Okay, when we come back, I want to tell you a follow up with one story out of Germany that really supports what you said, and also should remind us what could happen here. And when we come back from break, so I'd like to share that with you.
We'll be right back.
Mary, did you know the your baby boy would one day walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy will give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm the storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy walked where angels trod? When you kiss your little baby, you kiss the face of God. Oh Mary, did you know?
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm on with my co-host, Red Beckman, and our very special guest tonight, Gary Forman. Gary, you were right in the middle of a thought when we cut you off for break.
And I wasn't cut off. I was just, as Red said, was talking about his discussion about Germany, it's very true. It was taken by the Nazis, and I want to just share this interesting story because a lot of people don't realize this. Of course, when we think of Germany during World War II, we think of the whole country as our enemy. And my mother's uncle was they weren't really much far apart in age, but he was a dissident, and she was telling me the story. That at one point, when the SS came marching through, and this was, I believe, around 1939, the SS was marching through their town, and they came to a halt, and I think it was also in their vehicles, and the dissidents, who just didn't like what was happening in the country, and my mom's uncle was part of that group, went up to them, and he spit on the SS. Well, he went off to Dachau, and then as the war developed, he served on every major front there was. He was in the Russian front. He was with the Africa Corps. He was in Italy. I mean, you know, it's and what's also interesting is that Red, that and I'm sure this is not unfamiliar with you, but when you actually talk to the people who were in the war. And they can tell you from some very interesting perspectives of what really happened to the whole brainwashing process and how they were swept under the rug with all the political propaganda. And they believed it, and they bought into it. And years later, I remember the tears and the crying at picnics in the backyard. And once the beer started flowing and they started talking, and all of a sudden every picnic ended up the same way. Everyone was crying and mourning for that country they lost because they had bought into the crazed machinations of a megalomaniac. And they were living in denial because they believed everything that was being told to them. And you know, I remember my mom saying to me, it could happen here. And, of course, you know, I said, Mom, it won't happen here. This is America. She says, it could happen here. She, you know. And you know, that's when you live a world view like that and see how people behave and how human nature does its thing with power and with ego, we see the results of that, and now there are things my mom said to me back when I was a kid that are coming to surface now today, and you're right. I mean, it was a country that was conquered from within. I think I was supposed to continue on with the thought, wasn't I?
No, I thought Red was going to comment back to that.
Well, I just. I was thinking the title on my book, Walls in Our Minds.
Mm-hmm.
The title of that book, I don't watch much television, but I tell you, I watched the Berlin Wall thing as the mm-hmm. people were climbing around on that wall and chipping away with their hammers and their chisels. And that's mm-hmm. where the title of the book, Walls in Our Minds, came from, because I said, those people, it was not the politicians who built that wall. They didn't go out there in the middle of the night real sneaky-like and put up that wall. They first told the lies to the people mm-hmm. and got the people believing the lies, and then the people went and built the wall. And I've told people, well, you've never seen or heard of a man-eating lion or a tiger that have built a cage and put themselves in it. It's only human beings that do such things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what happened in East Germany. The people themselves built that wall, and I'll tell you, it thrilled me no end to watch them taking that wall down. It was... I'll never forget it. But they had walls built in their minds first. And I said, the lie is the building block, and belief is the mortar that builds walls in our minds.
Absolutely.
And I just want you to know how come that title is on that book.
Well, it sure resonates. And the other thing, too, is that you were talking about our minds. The mind is the most powerful thing in the universe. I mean, it is what creates everything, and that leads me to, yeah, it is exactly that. But even more is that I think we have to be conscious about how we think, because one of the things that quantum physics and quantum theory is really discussing actively now is that we have to be very careful about how we think, because what we think about is what materializes, and it's okay to talk about what you don't want, but we should only do it to the point to choose what we're going to think about and what we want to become, and this is a human nature issue, but we have to remind ourselves that if indeed we want freedom, then we better start focusing on what we want and not focusing on what we don't want, because that is what's going to create a reality. Now, we're not kidding ourselves, because we're very real with each other about what we're facing. But I think now is the time to really get explicit, get detailed visualization about what it is we want. And that law of attraction, that natural law, will start coming into focus. So I think that what I want to do with the American Mind Project is certainly talk about, you know, differences in a way, but mostly get people to focus on what it will be like to have our country back again. And the more we can do that, the more and the sooner it will materialize that way.
Red?
Well, you
hope
know,
we didn't
I...
lose you. Hope...
No, you didn't lose me. I was just busy thinking here. I've said it for years. We've had a lot of, you might say, high-profile type of people out selling the Patriot thing. And I've had some, I don't know how to put it. I've had some argument with some of these people that have written a bunch of books and such. And you'll find that what we know of as the Patriot movement in this country, they have become so absorbed in just talking about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't understand that we don't need to talk about the problem. Everybody, just about everybody knows about the problem. We know about the Federal Reserve Bank, and we know about the different organizations out there that seem like they're committed to destroying our way of life. We need to talk about solutions, and I used to tell some of these people, I would tell them, I'd say, I'll allow you 25% of your time to talk about the problem, but I want to hear 75% of your time talking about the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I developed, well, that's why I started writing books, that's why I started, you know, I let a good business go because nobody was talking about the solution. Everybody wanted to talk about the problem. And so, you know, this is what I'm looking for here. I'm looking for the solution to our predicament in this country. And so I don't think I've said that with Terry before like this, but... we need solutions. We don't need any more books or anything. And of course, see, we've got opportunists that have migrated into the Patriot movement, and one in particular took several pages out of my one book and put it into his own book. And the publishing game, why that's called cut and paste. And I've seen a lot of this in the freedom movement. They call it the freedom movement. I call it the freedom movement. And we've seen a lot of that, and that's a certain amount of, there's a certain amount of dishonesty involved with that. So the Continental Congress, Gary was telling what he was seeing, and what I saw was that we had a lot of new blood coming into the movement that were interested in solutions. And yeah, I had been talking about restoring the grand juries in this country. I'd been talking about it for about 35 years, and nobody, it just seemed like it went in people one ear and out the other. And now, all of a sudden, here I'm hearing it from many, many, many angles in this country. And I was listening for it at the Continental Congress, and sure enough, there it was, people talking about the grand juries. And that's solution material. And so I saw something happen at the Continental Congress. I wasn't there at the very beginning, and I wasn't there for the final, but I was there for 4 days. And I saw growth. I saw delegates who were they were becoming energized. I don't think they were energized that way when they all assembled there. They were from all the different states, 48 different states and such. But, boy, they come around, and they, when I was there, I'll tell you, they were focused. And I saw that, and I really appreciated it. And where I was a little bit... Well, I was a little pessimistic about what was going to happen, but boy, I'll tell you, I changed my viewpoint, and I'm sure glad that I was there to see what happened. And now with Gary coming into the on the scene here, I think that the good Lord is working something in our day, and I'm just thrilled to death by it.
Well, you know, for both you, Terry, and Red, I have to tell you, this is, and I'm watching some of the on the website, I'm watching some of the chats about the, you know, whether people, what their thoughts are on some of the things we're discussing about whether or not people really know, and you know, there's a lot to learn from all this, from all these issues, but let me go back one thing that we're discussing on focusing on what we want. There's no question in that there are a lot of people who have their head in the sand. I mean, there's and are clueless. But I think by focusing and talking about the type of life, responsible life, virtuous life that we want to have as Americans again, and probably more so than ever before. Now you got to remember, the discussions that are taking place throughout this country now are unlike anything we've ever had before in the last half a century. I can't recall when on the street where this many people were actively involved in the kind of discussions we're having on a daily basis today. I know that's never happened before. Because we are very comfortable, relatively comfortable. And now people are talking about the Fed. Now, when's the last time you had that many millions of people talking about the Federal Reserve? I mean, that was never part of our everyday discussions. You never heard about the Fed. And how many people really, truly challenged, you know, the taxation and the IRS? So, I mean... We're really making some quantum leaps here, but the way I think we really fill in the gaps is we keep intensifying the dreams of what we want, because by focusing on that kind of quality and responsible life that we're discussing right now, those who don't know anything will get what we're talking about. That it will resonate with them, and they'll compare it without us complaining about what's existing right now. And I think that we will be able to fill in that gap very quickly. But and the other way, the reason it'll work is because this is energy level wise. This is the kind of thing that will attract those kind of people. When you start talking about this kind of a human responsibility to our Creator and to our Republic, you are going to create an energy that's so much different than the government talk, and then that will cancel out a lot of negativity, because there's something, like you said, in that room with the Continental Congress, that room was being run on its own electricity, and that's what happens when people, and that's what was probably going on when the founders were together. And then they didn't always agree, but their intentions, their integrity, their commitment, their passion, their intelligence was at such a high level that it was probably, creating its own air conditioning for Philadelphia in those summers. I mean, I have to tell you, when you get people on purpose, on target, and their integrity levels very high, there is an electricity in those kind of spaces that we have forgotten about what that's like. Because most of our American pastime has been about being nasty and being goofy and glib and just following Trivial Pursuit. The energy level for that is really, really low. So I would tell everyone who's listening tonight is just know that when you raise that intensity, when you raise your integrity up, when you raise that, you shift the whole vibration of the planet. And that energy, that God energy that we've all been given, goes into another gear. And I want to tell you, it is exciting to be a part of that. And that's what we can do for one another, is raise ourselves up, raise up the human spirit. And that's what our Creator wants us to do.
I couldn't agree more. Well, we've had a pretty good 2 hours. We've got about 8 minutes left, gentlemen. So any final thoughts or things that we haven't covered that you wanted to cover tonight, now's the time to do it.
I didn't know if there was anyone who wants to discuss anything with us so far out there, or if they're just going to listen in or whatever. But I would encourage anyone who wants to contribute on any level for the expression of the American mind to contact you, Terry, and then we can put everyone together when they're ready. But I just think that 2010, I said back, a year ago, I said, 2009 will be a year when there's no excuse for anyone to be bored. And I'm never bored, but I know some people are. But I would tell you, 2010, mark it on your calendars. It is the year of your life. This will be a year I guarantee you will never, ever forget. Now, I have some years that I remember in my early part of my life. You can't forget them. 1968 was one. They call that the year of the battle cry. Of course, 1963, the assassination of John Kennedy. But there are years in people's lives they'll never forget. I think 2010 is going to be one of those years. First of all, because it has to be. And I feel it. I feel it in a lot of ways. I'm not fearing it, but I know there's work to be done. And I look forward to rolling up my sleeves with so many other great Americans and doing what we should have done many years ago. But now it's time to do what we're supposed to do. It's our time. It's our call. It's our responsibility. And I want to be a part of it. And I'm counting on a lot of other people who I haven't even met yet to be part of that. So, gentlemen, thanks for letting me be a part of this tonight. And with a lot of prayers and expectations of things to come.
Well, we're
Gary,
going
I have to tell you.
We're going to be available, for any help that we might be able to give. So,
You can count on I'll be calling you. And I know we'll be talking more, very soon. But it's been a privilege to be part of this program. And I have to say that, Red, I you and I have never met, but I first became acquainted with you. Well, I've seen your videos before. So when Terry passed it on, I thought, well, I know who he is. And then, of course, I saw your presentation on the website on the 18th of November. And so this has been very satisfying to me. And Terry, it's been great having conversations with you about a lot of issues. And I just feel very fortunate because I have a very wonderful surrounding of resources and genius in different directions, in different departments that I deal with on a regular basis. And I can't wait to turn it all loose. I mean, the things that we've been blessed with and the talents and the resources and the technology that we have, man, I want to turn it loose for the right reasons, not just to entertain. I want to turn it into real material that does something. And I've been very fortunate because I've been able to produce shows for, you know, things you're familiar with. But the main thing is now we got to really make it count. I mean, now we've got all the reason in the world to perform and make it happen. So, man, I'm charged. I really am, and I can't wait to get to this next step.
Well, Gary, what's encouraged me more than anything else was the people that I met at Continental Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you that nothing has encouraged me as much as seeing the courage and the intelligence and the sincerity of the people that were there. And they didn't all have the same idea. They didn't all think just exactly alike. They all had their various, you know, bents on what they thought was important or what they didn't want to do or what they wanted to do. But the passion was there. The passion and the courage and the sincerity was there in almost every person there. And I'm, you know, I just met such great people that now that I've got this network built up across the country that I'm a part of.
Yeah, I don't know how much time we have. How much time do we have here? We got what, 2 more minutes? Okay, I got to tell you this because you'll enjoy this and you will too, Fred. When, you know, I had at that last minute, I was able to get round up the living history reenactors to come out to the fife and drum and the honor guard and all that. And, you know, they didn't know what to expect because it's something, I had asked a number of them to check out the website to watch the sessions a couple days before they came, so they have an idea what they're coming into. And you know, and when they had a chance, a few did. I got to tell you this: when they finished with that closing ceremony, and they came out of there, and they shook everyone's hand, they went, and a couple of them were able to go to dinner with all of us as a follow up. They turned around to me. They turned around to me and said, "Wow." They just were just like, this is real, man. This is just the electricity, the intelligence, the passion. I mean, they felt it, and they were so glad that, you know, they were there to contribute. And because they're all these people who are most of these people who are involved in living history are absolute scholars of this period, and that also the founding fathers. So they can pick up that energy and that intelligence and that real passion that you were talking about. I mean, that was real clear. And I think we're going to see that multiply in ways we could have never imagined a few years ago. I think we're going to see it immediately on the streets in the first quarter of 2010. We are going to see things happen and things turn around. I'm seeing candidates come out and give passionate speeches like a Patrick Henry. I mean, and we're going to see this, and I think we're going to see real Americans, real statesmen, real stateswomen come together.
Well, Gary, I really want to thank you for coming on tonight. You've been a wonderful guest, and I know we want to have you back sometime, but I'm looking forward to working with you and getting this project off the ground and getting it out there into people's hands, and the time is definitely of essence. I don't believe we've got, you know, a lot of time to get this done, and I'm glad that you have given it that kind of urgency. And I know that that Red is ready, raring to go. So, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much. Have a good evening.
Red, final word.
I've been looking, waiting for this day to happen, and it's here. And no one is any more thrilled than I. And I can tell you there are some people that aren't one bit thrilled. And that's the enemy. So I'm sure they're listening in, and they got an earful tonight. And I hope they start looking at themselves and start apologizing for what they've done to us.
Amen to that. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night to you. We gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider.
Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.